This means that Donald Trump will be the 45th president of the United States.
This is your life now. This is our election now. This is us. This is our country. It's real.
Hi, and welcome to this week's 45th podcast. I am here with the mysterious AG of the Mueller She Wrote podcast. And we're here to talk about everything that was even more insane than normal happened the past week.
It was a crazy week, that's for sure. Hi, how are you today?
I am great. And that was a crazy Tuesday.
Tuesday news day, that's for sure.
But every day's news day now. I'm like, Friday news dump, Tuesday news dump. We'll get in all that. First of all, for those of you who did not listen to Mueller, She Wrote, can you give us an overview of your podcast?
Sure. We're three women. We're comedians now turned journalists. And we basically break down the Mueller investigation and everything that springs from it every week. I go by AG because I work for the Trump executive branch. And in order to not violate the Hatch Act and to kind of keep on the DL because he's been purging non-loyalists, I go by a pseudonym. So that's the long and short of it.
Less awkward, probably.
Yeah, exactly. Less awkward at work.
So who came up with the name?
There was a person on, like, I went to the hive mind, right? And I asked my Facebook followers, you know, as myself as a comedian, if you were going to do a Mueller podcast, what would you call it? And a comedian friend of mine suggested Mueller, She Wrote.
It's definitely the best name possible.
And I said, that's it. We're doing that. We're never 100% the correct answer.
Shut it down. We're good to go.
Yeah. No more submissions.
My husband listens to your podcast, and he had a request for a question for you.
Oh, sure.
What does it mean to put some beans on it?
So a while ago, and it's so funny because I'm pretty new to podcasting, and so I assume everyone's been listening to every word I say. But basically what happened, which is not true, but basically what happened is I was looking for a catchphrase like Rachel Maddow has one where she says, watch this space. And I wanted something like that, like, you know, pay attention to this, keep, you know, put a pin in it kind of. And I was asking all my friends, like, what is a catchphrase? Like, what should I do? What should I do? And so finally I said, you know what? I have a friend named Dallas McLaughlin. He's a comedian. He used to do a bit about like the dumbest catchphrases ever, because he's a comic and he was thinking of, like, I need a catchphrase like get her done. And so a bunch of really dumb catchphrases, and put some beans on it was one of them. That's just where it came. Nothing, no depth to it at all.
I'll admit I'm kind of disappointed because we had a lot of theories and it turns out that none of them are right.
Oh, I gotta hear your theories.
We decided it was probably British and it was something obscure and it probably meant something like put some more effort in or go and get them.
That's amazing. That's so great. I'm going to tell Dallas that there's theories. He'll love it.
I need a catchphrase.
I think he had some more. I can ask him.
Huh? Yeah. Get back to me on that. I need a good one. So this week's catchphrase, if it had one, would, probably be guilty.
Guilty and immunity, I think, would be the ones.
8 counts of guilty, couple counts of pleading guilty, 8 counts of, yeah, no, 8 guilty on a trial, 8 at a plea deal, and at least 4 with immunity. So let's back up to last week, or last episode on Tuesday, before everything unleashed. And I will just say I'm totally right, because I totally called the day they were going to make a verdict. I'm basically psychic.
Nice.
I was just like, Tuesday, because it sounds good. But it worked out. And I will admit, first, AG, what was your prediction for what would happen at trial?
I thought he was going to be found guilty on all 18 counts, to be honest. I thought the evidence was too overwhelming. I guess it turns out that the judge wouldn't allow them to have a copy of the indictment to know which charges went with which evidence. And I think that that could have caused a problem for that one holdout person, that one juror. The rural juror who you know, was hung on those 10 counts. I thought he was going to be guilty on all 18, and I thought they'd be back by Friday. But that lack of a roadmap, I think, is what hung him up and kept him. I think that one holdout is what kept him there longer, you know, on Monday and Tuesday.
We're both equally wrong then, because I was guessing more like, I wasn't sure, but I was guessing more likely that most likely outcome was going to be an acquittal, or not acquittal, a hung jury all the way through.
Oh, you thought it was going to be a full on mistrial. Actually, I think at some point I said that I think he would be found guilty on 10 counts. But
if only it was 10, then it'd be like more guilty than no verdict. And then Trump wouldn't be able to claim this was a win in that tweet he had. But only 8 out of 10.
He's stupid. It's not a win. You get convicted on one count. You the prosecutors have a W.
That's cool. Like half life instead of life. A Manafort's age ain't going to matter none.
Nope. And he's got a whole other trial coming up in September with 5 times as much evidence and a lot more years that he's facing. And the jury in D.C. is not going to be nearly as nice as the one in Virginia.
And it will be a much more interesting trial. The charges there are much more interesting and substantive. I'm excited for that. This one was honestly, I think they even planned to have more come in, but Judge Ellis was not letting it happen. So this was a pretty restrained, I guess, trial in terms of telling the whole story of what went on here. With this verdict, I feel pretty good about the D.C. case because they can tell their whole story there. It's money laundering. It's got more evidence. I feel good about it.
They let the pictures of the clothes in. They're allowing pictures of the clothes. I think it's open and shut now.
That's prejudicial, man. That's too much. But I really was worried about this verdict. I was thinking it'd probably be a hung jury just because of the dynamics going on right now. And it almost was. Apparently, the evidence for those 8 counts was so overwhelming that even the one holdout couldn't find a way through to find him not guilty. But in the other 10, and there were a couple, actually, honestly, there were a couple that seemed like, even for an unpolitical trial where there's no sort of bigger meta fate of the Republic sort of deal going on, I could see a jury having trouble getting a unanimous verdict on, because there were some issues there, like the ones with the bank loans. Part of the issue was that the bank fraud counts involving a loan that it seems like the bank guy was determined to give to Manafort anyway, because he's hoping for a job inside the Trump administration. So can it still be bank fraud if you are working with someone who's happy to be defrauded? So I did think that probably there'd be a few, but I'm glad that there was only one holdout and she was only a partial one. And by the way, we know this because there was one juror who has come forward. I don't know if any more have.
None that I have heard of. And yeah, it's just, she came forward and she wasn't the one who was the holdout. And Fox News kind of made her seem that way at first because she's a Trump supporter.
You watched it? I couldn't.
Yeah. Yeah, I watched
recap.
It. But yeah, so you're exactly right. It was just that one holdout. And that's going to, if the prosecution has until August 29th, which is Wednesday, I believe, to determine whether or not they're going to retry those 10 counts. And the fact that there was only one holdout may push them toward retrying. If it's split more even, if it's a few jurors, they might take their W and walk. But
yeah,
who knows?
But on the other hand, those were some of the weaker counts in that whole indictment. Not saying they're weak. I'm just saying relatively. So if they were going to lose on some, it was the ones they lost on. So. Exactly. I also think that it's going to get worse and not better from here out because Trump is doing everything he can to poison the jury pool, like he does in every case he is involved in. There are a lot of Trump supporters, mathematically, most juries in these trials, and there's going to be more, are going to have Trump supporters on it. And the more the Trump supporters see this as a political witch hunt, the odds that you get one that can't see the way past that increase dramatically. I mean, there's 12 people on a jury. More likely than not, one of those 12, if the jury is from a state like Virginia, which is fairly, not evenly split, but close enough, you're going to have one there who is going to buy into full-on Trumpism. And it's going to be hard to get convictions in those cases.
Yeah.
Really hard.
I don't know. I kind of feel a little bit differently. I'm not too worried. I'm not as worried about it. I don't know. But maybe it's because I'm just kind of, I've got tunnel vision and I'm just looking at this DC trial right now. And there's so many.
Yeah, the DC one's in the back. I don't know. I shouldn't say that. I should not say that at all. The DC one, of all the trials they're going to have, I think this is the most slam dunk one.
I think so too. But who knows? They could come up with some other charges that are absolutely indisputable that we don't know about yet. But
no one else with that much evidence against them is going to take it to trial.
Yeah.
I think Manafort will be alone. Yeah.
That's true. So, everyone's pleading.
What? Oh, when you watched the Fox News segment, did the juror indicate like why they returned their verdict when they did? Did they know about the timing of anything that was going on, or did they? Were they aware they timed their verdict release for the exact same time that Michael Cohen was pleading guilty in New York?
No, I don't think she didn't mention it actually on the interview. So I don't know either way. I'd like to think that they had no idea.
And it was intentional, though. That's a baller move. Total respect.
Right. Like, hey, wait, let's wait.
Let's add to the drama, guys. Like, they finished up at breakfast. They're like, you know, like 10 a.m. They're like, okay, here's what it's going to be. Let's just wait. I hear something's happening in New York today. Let's like try and time it to blow everyone's minds.
Yeah, so. I bet if they were following instructions, they wouldn't have been watching news and they probably wouldn't have known about it. But
maybe the bailiff told him, he's like, guys, guess what? Don't ask why. Just hear me out. Do it at 4 p.m. Right. So there's a clothing company that I'm loving even more than I expected. It's called Everlane. And what they do is produce premium essentials using the finest materials without traditional markups. And they actually tell you their real costs, so you know you're never overpaying. If you're anything like me, one thing your closet needs more of is the basics. Good clothes that you can wear anytime and can go with all sorts of things you already have. Good shirts, pair of jeans, sundresses, the stuff that you're gonna use a million times and needs to hold up well. And that's where Everlane comes in. They are breaking the mold of luxury essentials for women. With high quality, long lasting styles, and they're doing good while they're at it, because they only work with the best ethical factories around the world. And right now, you can check out our personalized collection at everlane.com/45th. That's right, you can check out me and Rabia's collection at everlane.com/45th. Plus, you'll get free shipping on your first order. That's everlane.com/45th. Whatever it was, whether it was fate, whether it was, you know, juror manipulation, by chance, that Tuesday, we had not just the verdict return for Manafort, we had Michael Cohen, kind of suddenly, out of nowhere, pleading guilty to 8 counts, with fairly significant time there. Like, I was not that surprised that he see the plea necessarily, because there have been some indications over the past few weeks that that's what it was heading towards. But honestly, if he was going to plea, I was thinking it'd be like a 6 months to a year. That kind of charge. And he is looking at serious time here. Like, there's a very, yeah, very good chance he's going to face some serious time here. Not Manafort time.
At least 5 years. At least 5 years.
Yeah. I mean, we're not talking, like, you know, the full Manafort, but it's more than most white-collar criminals willingly face, especially when there's as many moving pieces there are here. But yeah, I'm still surprised. I think there's...
We don't know how much he wasn't charged with.
Yet.
You know?
And, well, right. Well, we also don't know if this... Because it's so... Back up a bit. What happened in New York is this was a basically Mueller farmed out some of his prosecutions. This was one of them, it seems like. So this is SDNY. This is not the Mueller investigation. This is, you know, existing U.S. Attorney's Office that brought these charges. And there was 5 counts. I can't do math. 5 counts, I think, of tax evasion. And then like the couple of.
One count of bank fraud where he. Yeah. Took a HELOC out and lied about his income or debt.
Yeah, no, that's totally wrong. What are the odds they only have one charge of bank fraud they could bring against this guy? So they must be holding something back. But they also have the two biggies are the 2 campaign finance violations.
Those are the big ones. Those are the ones where he implicated Trump.
Yes. I mean, they're all bad and they're all serious time. So that's what's going on there. What we don't know is if those are the only charges he's facing, because theoretically... Mueller could still be investigating him for his investigation. We don't know if he sees Cohen as a target for any collusion-related charges or other, like, election-related charges. It's possible he did not send out everything to SDNY.
It's true, yes. And he also could have sent everything to SDNY, and anything Russia would probably come back to him. That's a very common practice for prosecutors to do that kind of a thing. But I think... The important lesson here is that Mueller is really only investigating Russian collusion and conspiracy. He's allowed to investigate whatever he wants, but I think part of his way of building a bulletproof case is by not creating any appearance of whatsoever of going outside of the scope of his, you know, his office of, you know, being the special counsel, which he was tasked with crimes of collusion with Russia and anything else that arose from it. But he's like, you know what, I'm just going to hand everything that's not Russia off. So, you know, they can't tear holes in my case, because right now, Andrew Miller, a Stone guy, right, he held himself in contempt of court so that he could appeal. And he's appealing Mueller's constitutionality, and that's going to go up all the way to the D.C. appellate court. It could go to the Supreme Court. And I think because of the way that Mueller's been staying within his jurisdiction by handing off all this other stuff, staying at the Russia probe, they're going to have a really hard time with that case.
So it could be Mueller's call, but I kind of wonder how much Rosenstein's involved here. Rosenstein is the lately invisible force behind everything. He is the gatekeeper. He is the approver. He is the master survivor. And anytime Mueller is trying to do anything big here, like, you know, charge people, expand investigation, he has to go through Rosenstein, get permission to do it. So it could be that what we're seeing here with all this farming out of certain cases, that's related to Rosenstein's approach to the case and what he is and is not giving approval to Mueller to do.
Yeah, it could be that. It could be Rosenstein's decision. They could be, I don't know whose idea it is, but
Rosenstein did something, because at one point it was looking pretty dicey. He was looking like he was on the edge there. And then suddenly he just fell off the radar. Trump stopped talking about him. Trump seems totally cool with him. His job seems relatively secure. What did he do? Like,
I don't know. It could just be that, you know, it would be really optically, politically bad this close to a midterm election for him to do that. But then he's just going after Sessions. So there's no rhyme or reason to it at all.
It seems like Trump is genuinely not angry at Rosenstein. Like, something happened that made Trump think that Rosenstein's his boy. Like, they're good. They're not besties, probably. But, like, he's definitely much a bigger fan of Rosenstein than he is of Sessions. I'm sure it was something ethically compromising and possibly dubious in nature, but necessary for the moment, knowing Rosenstein. He's not going to be the noble hero of this whole story when it's over, but I'm shocked he's still there. And, you know, it's probably for the best. I guess we'll find out one day.
It is. I mean, I don't like politics makes strange bedfellows, for sure. I would never be ever rooting for Jeff Sessions or Rosenstein in any other universe.
They're terrible human beings.
Garbage people. And here I am, like, stay there, hold on. Like,
I'm not going to call Rosenstein garbage necessarily.
No.
Just like regular prosecution, average prosecutor garbage level. We're not talking like Sessions level. But he is definitely not a prosecutor I support for anything else other than him blocking Trump's interference in the Mueller probe. Other than that, he's a very typical right-wing pro-prosecution guy who apparently has no problem with even most bullshit forensic evidence, but that's a different rant for a different podcast.
Story for another time.
Yes. So, but that's not all. Super Tuesday continued, because we had a bunch of Super Tuesday things. We had an Omarosa tape, which I never actually saw. I don't know what it was. I remember saying that vaguely. Omarosa was like, I got a new tape when released tonight. And everyone's like, really? Because we got enough going on right now.
I don't remember her tape coming out. I remember her mentioning it, but I don't remember seeing it or what it was.
It could not have been that interesting. We had news that Kudlow had like a posted a white nationalist, basically, or white supremacist borderline kind of follower at his house, because they're now friends, apparently. And then we have Mr. Hunter.
Duncan Hunter.
Oh, my God. Representative Duncan Hunter is...
Yeah, California's 50th District, San Diego. A lot of Navy here.
Oh, he's yours. That's right.
Yeah. He's not specifically mine. He's a little east of us, but it's a big Navy town, and it's a conservative area. And when the news came out and everybody found out that he told the Navy to go fuck themselves, I don't know if I can say that on your podcast.
That's totally cool.
You guys do Twitters. I was pretty sure the two of you. I was like, yeah, right on. But yeah, that was the Navy. Yeah, the whole Navy. And then of course this comes out, and now we had his opponent Amar Kampanijar on our show a few weeks back, and so now he's just blown up. He's like, hell yeah, bring it. You know, because 60 counts. Over 60 counts. And then he blamed his wife.
That was the, oh my God, the epic. So the indictment alone is pretty hilariously awful. This guy is, you know, part of me is like, okay, so this is probably the first, maybe last scandal where I have someone in Congress who misused campaign funds to buy Steam games.
right.
Like, okay.
$3,000 in tequila shots.
Like, oh, well, you know, I...
Almost like high five, man.
I can't say I'm judging him too hard, but I do want to see his, like, his theme list. I don't know what games he was playing. It could change my mind entirely. But... that okay, fine. You know, he's doing tequila shots and playing Steam. He's the people's man. He's a pop. But then he's got, like, all these vacations. That's what led to the Navy comment. And he was trying to basically take a vacation on the campaign's dime, and then to cover it up as, like, a campaign or, like, government expense, he wound up, like, a little Navy tour. And the Navy's like, we can't do this day. So, but yeah, so it's a pretty awful, like, this guy is, like, oh, he had like $38,000 in overdraft charges in like 3 years or something. How is that mathematically possible?
I don't even know. Like, I was thinking about it and I'm like, no, an overdraft fee is the same whether you overdraft $10,000 or $1. Yeah. So I'm like, it just seemed at first like, oh, he's really extravagant. He spends a lot of money. He really overdrafted his account, so they charged him a lot. Nope. If somebody did the math and it's a 35, that's 10,000 overdraft fees.
Okay, so thinking this through, what seems to have happened is he was like playing some game with like microtransactions, didn't realize his account was empty and kept like buying boosters or whatever. and like, you know, 100 boosters per game or something, and didn't realize each time.
Steam, right. Yeah.
That's my guess.
Maybe Candy Crush in-app purchases or Farmville.
Oh my God, I hope it was Farmville. That would be amazing.
That would.
Anyway, so all this happens. It's not looking good for him. Oh, by the way, he's also the second person in Congress sitting to endorse Trump way back at the beginning. The first is also under indictment.
For insider trading, Collins, right?
Yeah. Then this guy, Duncan Hunter, goes on TV and just literally, like very literally, in a not literal way, hurls his wife under the bus.
Yep.
I was shocked. I think I even gasped watching him. Like, he did not just say that. The interviewer, to her credit, I don't know who she was. It was another Fox blonde. And she was really being a real journalist. And she was not backing down. I mean, she just gave the questions anyone would give to a guy in this situation. And he seemed to get desperate and was kind of panicking on air. And he's like, oh, my wife is the one in charge of that. So I don't know what she was doing. It must have been her.
What a gem.
Yeah.
And then I think it actually came out later that day, too, that he was trying to spend campaign donations on his legal fees. He was trying to pay his legal fees with his campaign money. You can't do that, man. You can't do that.
Yeah. I mean, I guess Ben Carson started this, like, spouse blaming trend, so.
And something else that really upset some of his constituents is when he said, look, there's no law against being poor, because he was talking about his overdraft fees. And he said, there's no law against being poor. Here's a man who makes $184,000 a year. Saying that in defense of his horrible spending habits, but you know, his wife did, not him.
So, yeah,
wow, whatever, man. That was just insane.
Anyway, thinking this through,
oh, yeah.
We are definitely doing some like Final Destination shit here. We have number one and number two of like Trump's congressional endorsers have been indicted. So, I don't make the rules, but it basically means that Sessions, the next one to go down.
Oh, nice. Yeah, he was the third.
Yep. So, although I don't know how, can the Attorney General be indicted?
Yeah.
I mean, there's no technical reason.
I mean, I personally think that, I think that the only question is whether the sitting president can be indicted.
Yeah. I guess theoretically, I mean, it can't be a question that's come up too often in the history of America, but, you know, I guess that's what's going to happen. It's our future now.
Well, he is being investigated.
He is.
By Mueller. I know that for a fact. I mean, that's kind of the whole reason he had to recuse is because he met with Russians and lied about it. So,
as far as we've heard, they're not going to do that kind of, that would be too, if that's all that's happened, I don't think they're actually going to do anything. But then again, it's a very, very big if.
Well, I don't think that's all that's happened is what I'm saying.
Yeah. Yeah. Man, can you imagine being a Rosenstein and like signing off on the indictment of your boss?
That would be so evil.
I mean, he's the man for it. Like, dude, like, see, okay, seriously, here's my theory. Things are gonna get rough in the future, but like, if we needed to have like a superhuman that could survive basically any outcome, we need to find a way to combine the DNA of Rosenstein and Felix Sater. The two of them, they'd be unstoppable. Like, there is nothing that could happen that they could not find a way to weasel out of.
I think you're right.
Yeah, it's a force that we're not ready for yet. And possibly Carter Page. I don't know.
Oh, God, that guy. No, yeah, but he would bring hats, and we don't need those.
You know what? Like, that's just going to poison the gene pool here. Let's keep you out. Yeah. Maybe, like, a retirement community for him, where he can just go out of the pasture. he's like Mr. Magoo. He's going to, like, bumble through this and be fine. And, like, no one's really going to know why, but he's just going to be the one that, like, not because he was conniving or smart, he just magically kind of waltzed through it all with all the stuff falling around that all around him.
He was just a target. He was not a target of an investigation, but just a target of the Russians.
The world.
Yeah, I mean, they're like, here is a corruptible, greedy, a-hole idiot.
No, see, I feel like weirdly, and I know it's probably me, like, projecting. It's like when you give human emotions to animals and you shouldn't do that. For me, it's Carter Page. And I feel weirdly protective of him because despite his many flaws, he just seems like he doesn't really mean ill to anyone. He's very clueless in a lot of ways, and he's definitely greedy.
So you kind of see him as the innocent...
Not innocent's the wrong word. I just don't see him as malicious.
Okay.
I would be fine, I guess, in terms of, like, cosmic scales and all that, if Carter Page managed to skate out of this without any charges. Out of anyone, basically.
Yeah, well, he's definitely not. Like, I see three levels of people. Like, if I think about playing a video game, right, there's drones, there's, like, low-level guys you gotta kill, then there's medium bosses, and then there's a big boss. And I think that Carter Page is down at the bottom. I don't think he's any kind of a hard target for any investigations. I mean, they were, in fact, when he was part of that 2013 Russian spy ring, it was almost like they were trying to help him out. Like, but like, dude, you got to get away from these guys.
He's like the NPC that recurs, like, every new boss level. Yeah. He's there, like, the little minions, like, getting kicked around. And he's like, he went that way.
Yep.
Carter Page has not really been in the news lately. I don't know if that's because he's, you know, exhausted all he knows, or if something else is going on. Dude, as far as I know, still does not have an attorney. So, who the hell knows what's going on over there?
There's stuff that's not in the news right now that could be. You know, like you said, Rosenstein's gone quiet. Trump's not attacking him. Carter Page has disappeared. Where's Sater? Where's, you know, I mean, there's so many quiet strings of this investigation right now. It's kind of creepy. We've had David Priest on our show. He's a CIA, a former CIA official who used to brief Mueller on a daily basis. And he was absolutely blown away by the amount of detail and just facts that this guy can retain and pay attention to all at the same time. He says it was mind boggling how he was able to follow all of it.
I did see one article on him. I saw two. I saw one that was like talking about how he like did an illegal U-turn or something. I'm like, wow, we have definitely hit the bottom here of our news coverage. And the other was like, Mueller is a tough boss that makes his employees work evenings and weekends. I'm like, oh, so you're saying he's the boss of attorneys? Because that's kind of par for the course.
Exactly.
But there's also the other issue coming. I have not looked into detail into this. But I do wonder how the upcoming midterm elections are going to play here. I don't know how Mueller plans to deal with basically guidelines designed to avoid politicizing the DOJ in terms of like 60 days out from an election. I don't know if they feel internal pressure to get stuff done before then, but that would be September 7th. So that'd be pretty near future if that's the deadline they're playing by.
Yeah, and September 7th isn't... He's not even going to be interviewing Randy Credico until the 7th. And he's part of the Stonehenge, I call it. And obviously Andrew Miller's out to lunch with his holding himself in contempt and his appeal. So I don't see without the Stone piece.
That's going to be so incredibly stupid. I don't want to deal with it. It's going to be the stupidest conspiracy. I mean, conspiracies are usually stupid. Like most of the time, people who conspire in white collar offenses, we're not talking like super, even mob stuff's not that organized. It's often just like a bunch of executives running around trying to get stuff through without master plan. This is going to be the stupidest conspiracy the world's ever known. I mean, it's going to boggle our minds. I'm very confident of that. Yeah. Whatever the hell Mueller is doing. I don't know if you have like can recap this Credico Miller insanity in a soundbite, because it's a sprawling mess right now. It's not entirely clear where it's going, but Mueller is definitely focused on Stone right now. Like, Stone's time in the barrel can't be too far in the future.
Right. And Stone is part of the grander conspiracy and crimes of collusion with Russia. It's one of the main strings of it because, you know, he was a go-between between the Trump campaign and WikiLeaks.
Sort of, except even like the stuff we know about there is he was not always in the middle of it. And also he says a lot of dumb things and brags about stuff he didn't actually do. I mean, he definitely did stuff, but trying to figure out what he did do and what he's just bragging about doing is, you know, I'm sure it's a fun job.
True. But yeah, I mean, either way, he's wrapped up in the collusion part. And I have a feeling, at least my thought is that when Mueller starts dropping collusion and conspiracy indictments, they're all going to come kind of at the same time.
Yeah, it's going to be an avalanche of, I suspect.
Yeah, you can't release one without giving away a bunch of information to the others on the others. You know, it's everyone's wrapped up in it. And I don't know that he's going to be able to get that done by the election. I know that Giuliani wants him to. He wants him to write his report.
Giuliani wants a lot of things.
He's
probably not going to get much of them. Yeah. So my hope here is that the Roger Stone stuff is all. Well, have you followed like, the L.A. stuff, like the producer guy?
Which one?
Middleton or whatever, all that shit going on over there.
No, I haven't followed that.
I kind of have, but it's also, I think he's like 30 or something. It's this like Hollywood producer who is like the only real donor to Stone's PAC, which seems to be part of the Mueller investigation. We don't know what all they got up to, but theoretically, hear me out. This guy, Middleton, is like a big producer for movies like The Disaster Artist, and he's apparently buzzed with Wiseau from The Room. So in a perfect world, this is all going to link up. And we are going to have some kind of conspiracy with Tommy Wiseau in the middle of it.
Well, we already got Ice Cube.
and more celebrities. So why not? There'll be more celebrities too.
Ice Cube's involved.
It's going to be so mind-boggling and stupid. Like, we're just going like, you know what? The U.S. can't continue now. This is just too embarrassing. We got to shut it all down.
I was freaked out when I found out that Mnuchin is a movie producer. He puts money in movie. He did Dumb and Dumber 2.
Batman Lego. Or Lego Batman. Whatever. I did not. Wait, Dumb and Dumber 2?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. And we put him in the government?
I think he just put money in it. I don't know. But he's a goofball.
That's not a sound investment. I mean, actually, I don't know. For all I know, Dumb and Dumber 2 may have, you know, made bank.
I don't know. I didn't see it. But, there's just so many weird things.
Oh, gosh. The truth is, most of us are brushing our teeth wrong. Either we're not doing it for long enough, or we forget to change our brush on time. That's because most brands focus on selling flashy gimmicks, rather than better brushing. But not Quip. So, why is Quip different? Well, for starters, it's an electric toothbrush that's a fraction of the cost of bulkier brushes, while just packing the right amount of punch to help you clean your teeth. Quip's built-in timer even helps you clean for the disrecommended time of 2 minutes, with guiding pulses that remind you when to switch sides. And Quip's subscription plans are for your health, not just convenience. They deliver a new brush head on a dentist-recommended schedule every 3 months for just $5, including free shipping worldwide. Plus, they are backed by a network of over 20,000 dentists and hygienists and hundreds of thousands of happy brushers who use Quip every day. Quip starts at just $25, and if you go to getquip.com/45th right now, you'll get your first refill pack free with the Quip electric toothbrush. That's your first refill pack free at getquip.com/45th. Spelled GETQUIP.com/45th. Well, speaking of weird things in Hollywood and general corruption and creepiness, we haven't even touched on the other part of this whole Cohen thing, which is the payoffs, the hush money. The president had multiple affairs with like porn actresses and Playboy bunnies, and like this is kind of like a very, very, very far down the list thing. We're barely talking about anymore because no biggie.
Yeah. Well, that was a pretty big part of that whole Cohen plea deal was the implication where he said, you know, a candidate for federal office instructed myself and Pecker. Well, he didn't call him Pecker. He called him executive at AMI or whatever to basically we all conspired to make these payments and we didn't report them.
Yeah, and that's what they got. Well, so what we know right now is that there's at least three people, I think, who've gotten immunity in the Cohen investigation, which means they testified before the grand jury. Well, I think what it appears to be right now is that people connected to these hush money payments were given immunity for their testimony of the grand jury. Does not mean they flipped. Does not mean they're cooperating. it does mean they were forced to testify for the grand jury and had to answer any questions related to the investigation. And we probably should mention, as we went over before, Cohen's not a cooperating witness right now. He is not a flipper. He did not pull a Flynn here. His plea deal was a straight up plea deal, which was, you know, it would not be odd in a normal case, but this is not a normal case, so I'm still kind of confused about what happened there. But he straight up just did a plea deal with the charges against him. No cooperation required. Doesn't mean he won't cooperate, because he'll want to have a sentencing reduction probably, but it was not contingent on his cooperation.
Right, and there's also no sign of a Mueller cooperation yet, mm-hmm. but I think somebody was saying that he only started talking to prosecutors like a week and a half ago, so it would take more time to gather a cooperation agreement, so we could see that come out. But it is definitely true that, and you're right about the immunity thing. It could be where, you know, they pleaded the fifth, and they said, we give you immunity, and now you have to tell us. It could have been come in for questioning, and, you know, Weisselberg's lawyer might have said, I'm not stepping one foot in there unless you give me immunity. Maybe that went down. We don't know how it went down, but what I can tell you, at least, I have a really strong feeling that there's no way they gave immunity to all these guys just to nab Cohen. There's no way.
Just if they wanted to have just immunity to have it for the grand jury, they would. It's possible. And again, we're kind of guessing here because I've not seen any really. I've seen multiple contradicting reports. I don't know for sure what happened, but it could have been they just wanted to testify the grand jury against Cohen, and the immunity only extends to what they said there, and it's not a general or blanket immunity for like other crimes. They could still be charged. Right. In other words.
It's just a use immunity, but I would see Weisselberg as a bigger fish than Cohen. But I mean, I guess if it's just use immunity, that doesn't mean he doesn't face charges on something.
Doesn't rule out coming back later. And Weisselberg, for those who are not familiar with the Trumpberg power structure, is he's the fancier, more intelligent version of Cohen. Cohen knows a lot of bad shit about Trump because Cohen is the guy who's on the phones making threats and doing all the dumb thuggy mafia stuff. He's not mean. He's an attorney. Cooley. I'm sorry. I hate attorneys that make fun of like bad law schools or law school rankings, but like I have to make exception for Cooley because it's very perfect that that's where Michael Cohen went. but his operation is not as an attorney. He is the fixer. He's like the thug that goes through and intimidates people and, you know, fixes things. Weisselberg is a real deal. He is actually an executive who acts like an executive and helps run the Trump Organization, and pretty much does run it now, I'm sure. I mean, technically, he shares, you know, control of the company with Eric and Don Jr., but I'm going to guess that means he's in charge.
He runs the whole thing. In fact, when Trump divested and handed over his organization to a trust, he gave it to his two kids, his two sons, and Weisselberg.
And Weisselberg's been there since the 80s? He's been there for decades. There is very little he would not know, because he's also the one anxious to do all this stuff.
Yeah, he's the only other person who's allowed to sign checks for the Trump Organization besides the Trumps.
And let's be real, he is way smarter than Trump, so he definitely has a better grasp of what actually is going on here. And Weisselberg got involved because we have that tape, which I am still confused about the origins exactly or what all happened there. I think there's more to the story there that we don't know yet. But anyway, there's a whole tape that came out a few weeks ago now that Cohen or someone recorded of a conversation with Donald Trump, where he's talking about the payoff for, at that time, Karen McDougal, and also trying to hide the divorce records and other ladies. And Cohen straight up says, I talked to Alan Weisberg about how to finance this. He's going to take care of it. So, I mean, Trump's like, sounds shocked at the time that they have to pay for it. Like, wait, I thought, you know, I was going to make AMI pay for this.
I think he recommends that they use cash. And Cohen's like, no.
Yeah. I felt for him a little bit in that moment. Like, you can tell he's trying to delicately, like, introduce Trump, introduce the client to this, like, whole fear is going to happen. And immediately the client, like, goes to the worst possible option. You're like, no, back. No, we're trying to go here.
Yeah, like, no. But what he could have meant was, or this is going to be deniable, right? That's probably the only reason that's why you make a cash offer, is it so that you can deny that you made it.
Yeah. And that's not going to work here. I mean, Cohen was right. Like that was not going to work. Trump's instincts were entirely wrong. And Trump, that's the other flip side of all this. I think that Trump in many cases might be able to make a very valid argument for some of these charges that he lacks a criminal intent to commit the crime because he is too unaware of the facts to know what he's doing. That will not protect him from a lot of this stuff, but it will make it harder for prosecutors.
Yeah.
So, in fact, it's possible that Trump really didn't have much of a clue about how this whole payoff was being done until all this came up, until Giuliani had to tell him. Trump really might not have known the details, because why would he care? Like, he's not a details guy. He hates details. He hates knowing anything. So why would he go out of his way to learn the details of his own criminal schemes if he didn't have to?
Yeah, because that's how it kind of comes off to me, too. Like, that you can sort of even tell in that tape, he's like, what, cash? I don't care. Whatever you got to do. You know, I don't give a shit.
Just make it go away.
Call Alan or who you talk to, Pecker. I don't, whatever. Just do your thing.
Or if Pecker gets hit by a bus. Yeah. I still, like, if you go, if you've not listened to the exchange, go listen to it. And it just, the way it comes out, like, suddenly they're talking about Pecker and AMI and, like, trying to, all the catch and kill stories. And I really don't think this was where Cohen was going, but Cohen's like, we need to protect ourselves by getting rights to these stories and all this stuff. And Trump immediately goes to, what if he gets hit by a bus?
Yeah. That's so great.
I'm sure that may have helped convince Pecker that, like, you know what? Screw it. Take immunity.
Yep. Oh, and I love, by the way, I love it when Cohen is on the tape and he's like, yeah, I'm going to talk to Alan Weisselberg. Like, he gives his whole name.
I know, but, like, was that was he the one taping? Do we know that?
Yeah.
He was taping.
Yeah, he was the one taping those conversations.
Okay. So he was probably, like, speaking a bit to the tape.
Yeah, but it's just really fun. Like, Trump didn't even notice. Like, Cohen's like, yeah, well, we got to tell Alan Weisselberg, who works at 649 4th Avenue. In Manhattan.
This is the A-L-L-E-N Allen at Trump. Not the A-L-A-N like the other Allens at Trump Organization. Not like Fruiterfoss and what's-his-face Garden.
Yeah. Fruiterfoss. Like, but specifically, you know, Alan Weisselberg, who works for the Trump Organization for the last 30 years.
He could have just said Weisselberg, and that would have been more, like, undercover. And he says, like, Alan Weisselberg is doing all the finances. I got his approval on all of this. But that is interesting, though, because he was obviously not talking in code there. But that goes back to the Charleston thing. Cohen makes a comment in that tape. He's like, oh, going to the Charleston thing or something? And I don't think it's ever been established what the Charleston thing was. And that sounds like a use of code. And if he knew he was taping, that's more interesting then, because why would he intentionally talk in code?
I don't know. Maybe because he's protecting himself.
What happened in Charleston? Right? Anyway, what we know from there is that after that point, other things, there's a lot in information against Michael Cohen I'm still trying to puzzle out, and I'm not sure we know yet. One issue is why AMI kind of backed out on this deal. Originally, AMI did the catch and kill, but then something happened to make the deal fall apart. I don't know how or why, but at some point, AMI told Cohen, deal's off, like, Nix, go away. We don't know if money changed hands or how it did. But somehow the McDougal deal got complicated. And it might not mean anything, but it's kind of weird to me that they're silent about what happened in the end in the information.
What do you mean?
They don't explain it. They just say, like, oh, like, at some point Cohen got the heads up, like, don't go ahead with the McDougal deal. We're like, we can't do it. We're done. Why? Like, why the panic? Like, something happened. Someone freaked out. Did they continue on? And obviously at the grand jury hearing, where you have not just Weisselberg, but you've got, you know, AMI testifying, they would have asked about it. So they know the answers here. So why not include it in the information?
Don't know.
It could just be, lack of, like, space and, like, not wanting to include everything in there. But on the other hand, it makes me wonder if that's intentional, that they've got something that they don't want to share.
That's kind of what I'm thinking. They might have something they don't want to share. They might be considering indicting Trump. I really don't know. He's definitely
maybe Trump, but depends which one. I think they may be angling one of the other executives.
Could be doing that, or they could be angling to indict the organization.
That too. Oh God, Trump Organization is not going to exist anymore. Like, it's not going to exist when this is over, because there's no way.
And I remember when this whole investigation started, and I thought to myself, if anyone honestly thinks that Trump hasn't broken any financial laws in the last 40 years, that's the most hilarious thing I've ever heard. And I thought to myself, I don't know how we're going to get this out of the Russia investigation, but somebody's going to be looking into his finances. And now we know how the vehicle for that was the handoff to the SDNY.
I think the real scandal is going to be when we find out why action was not taken much sooner. And I think that when Trump is talking about all the conflicts that Mueller has, it may not be about that stupid golf course thing. Because it is impossible that the FBI was not aware, and the various attorney's offices were not aware of some of what Trump was doing, especially in the mid-2000 period. They had to have known. They didn't take action. They didn't do anything about it. But, I mean, let's be real. One of their, like, high-value supposed informants, cooperators, was working with the Trump Organization to do money laundering scams. Yeah. They must have known about it. This is Felix Sater. They must have known what he was doing because he's still their informant and still very valuable to them. They're letting him operate in the world because he's apparently, I'm very skeptical that he was actually as useful as Nikki is, but apparently Felix Sater is like the money laundering whisperer. So whenever they have questions about how money laundering works, they go to Felix Sater and he explains it to them. I don't know if I believe that, but that's what they think. That's what they testified to at like a sentencing hearing. Then again, they also thought he could get them Bin Laden's Stinger missiles. I'm not sure that worked out for them either. But they would have kept an eye on Felix Sater. Like, this is from, like, what, 02 to whenever What's-His-Face got caught with the child sex trafficking.
Oh, Turkey. 07.
Yeah. And then a little bit after with, like, Soho stuff. But there's, like, a good 5 years there where Sater and Trump are closely working together on various schemes. And we know the government's all over Sater. There's no way they missed it. So I think that a lot of the Trump Organization's secrets were kind of known by FBI for a long time now.
That's a good point. Yeah. And again, why was it not dealt with sooner when he was running for president? Like, whoa.
What if Trump was an informant?
An interesting theory. On who?
On everyone and anyone. Like, he did a lot of stuff in a lot of places where he would have gotten info. And it would explain why a company that was very openly corrupt, and obviously white-collar enforcement is hit and miss, and there's plenty of white-collar stuff that goes undetected even when everyone knows it's happening. But the Trump org was not really hiding it. It was so obvious and so blatant. They had no controls. So my background, it's like white-collar compliance. Basically all the stuff that Trump's in trouble for is what I do. And the way they ran the organization is just insane. They had no controls whatsoever. No one of any size business would operate that way, and yet they were, which could suggest they're just idiots and got lucky, or it could suggest that they felt comfortable for some reason. But
I'm gonna have to think about that and wrap my head around that one.
I mean, it's just trying to, for me, I've been trying to explain to myself this whole time how it's only catching up now when it was always so open and so obvious. And it could just be that white collar enforcement's really underdone in America.
I mean, they didn't prosecute Manafort back then either.
Mm-hmm. That's a very good point. Manafort was on their radar, though. We do know that they got close to it and apparently got called off.
Oh, yeah. Chuck Rosenberg, I think, was the one who made the call.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you know why?
No. All it said was, I can't remember what report I heard. That's the crazy thing about this fire hose of news.
You saw it and it's gone now.
Yeah, exactly. That Chuck Rosenberg was presented with the case and decided not to prosecute. I don't know why, but Chuck Rosenberg was the U.S. attorney in the Southern District of New York at the time.
That's really interesting because I've wondered about that too. Before, I was thinking it was just not a particularly appealing case. Like, it was going to be hard to win. He has lots of resources. Why? Maybe they just didn't want to do it. But now it's very clear it would have been very winnable. So why didn't they? Then again, white collar enforcement is very under. Yeah, that could just be.
Yeah, it could be that. It could just be resources.
Trying to hire an employee used to be hard. All those job sites you had to go through, all those resumes you had to go through, and a confusing review process. But today, hiring can be easy, and you only have to go to one place to get it all done. That's ZipRecruiter.com/45th. With ZipRecruiter, they send your job listing to over hundreds of websites and job boards. But they don't stop there. With their powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience and to invite them to apply to your job. As applications come in, ZipRecruiter analyzes each one and spotlights the top candidates for you, so you'll never miss a great match. ZipRecruiter is so effective that 80% of employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate to the site within the first day. With results like that, it's no wonder the ZipRecruiter is the highest rated hiring site in America. And right now, our listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive website. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/45. That's ZipRecruiter.com/45. ZipRecruiter.com/45. Go to ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Anyway, back to the Weisselberg issue. He was in charge of carrying out this hush money payment system. So if I had to like do like best moments in the whole information for Michael Cohen, I think the best part is that it strongly suggests that Trump's sons were delegated to help pay off his mistresses.
Yeah, definitely. They knew.
Yeah. And Weisselberg, who was executive one in the information, apparently wrote to them and was like, okay, here's the fake retainer agreement from Michael Cohen. Go get this paid from either Trump Foundation. It's still not clear where they got money from, to an executive at Trump Org, which probably is going to be Don Jr. or Eric.
Yeah, that's definitely who I think it is. And yeah, that note was interesting. Like, make this payment, say it's coming from the trust, and say it's for retainer fees for this month and this month. It was 2 months. I can't remember which months it was.
It was the January and February ones. I still want to know what happened, though, because they are, again, another place in information where once it goes vague. They have the information. We know who they talked to now. So they could have filled in these holes, or they would have filled in these holes, but they don't include them. We know now that there was, in order to pay off for Stormy and some kind of $50,000 tech software agreement, which no one knows about yet, or no one knows what it is.
I have a guess, but...
Whoa, on here, what is it?
I think it's from his time when he went to Europe. I think he was making payments to
Packers. See, that's the Steele memo.
Yep.
Maybe. It could be.
The old Steele dossier.
There's a lot of things going on there. I will say, I don't know if that part of it's true about what Cohen did, but if it happened, I don't think Cohen was in Prague. I think he was in Hungary.
Okay.
If it happened, which I'm not convinced by any means.
I'm sure they know now.
Yeah, someone knows now. But anyway, $50,000 for some kind of software we don't know about yet. I cannot wait to find out. Plus the $130 for Stormy Daniels. And they paid him back through a retainer agreement, which is a very odd choice because it means that they have to pay taxes on it, or the Cohen pays taxes on it. And at least two of the payments in January and February seem to have been paid out by the Trump Foundation. And it looks like they may have tried to bill them as like the Trump Foundation's legal expenses.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think that probably has something to do with the amount that he was repaid. They grossed up for taxes. They called it a retainer fee. They took $180,000 payment. I'm talking about the Karen McDougal payment now.
This is all of it combined. Yeah.
And then gave him $360,000 plus another $60,000 on top of that, for a total of $420,000. So I think the reason they did retainer fee was, yes, he would have to pay taxes on it, but I think they covered those taxes when they increased that payment.
They did, but this is bugging me because I don't know why they did it that way. What they ended up doing is they paid back Michael Cohen, who apparently used his HELOC to get the funds storming, and apparently for the software is.
Yep.
And they had in terms of like money laundering, they had a lot of options for how to pay him back. Like there are a lot of possible universes for how to get that money to him in a way that's not going to seem that weird. They chose a way that's more expensive.
Like you said, they coasted through the 2000s without getting caught. I mean, maybe they just are dumb and bold.
But they would have done it the cheaper way. If they're that dumb and bold, they would have done the way where they just pay back the actual expenses. Instead, they had to double the expenses so that Michael Cohen can pay income taxes on it. Which is weird because Michael Cohen has no problem dodging income taxes. So, like, not only is Trump Organization paying twice what it needed to pay to, like, compensate him for the hush money, like, they're also expecting that Cohen's actually going to pay income taxes on this when this dude has no problem whatsoever not paying income taxes. It's a lot
of
money.
But yeah, I think they might have also been paying him for something else that we don't know what it is. But I'm sure we'll find out.
So, who is your guess as to the next person to be indicted? And it cannot be, to clarify, it cannot be like a new indictment to someone who's already been indicted. Like, totally new player.
It can't be a superseding indictment?
Yeah, it has to be totally new. Who's next on the list?
Don Jr.
It's a bold call because once Don Jr. gets indicted, it's going to be dominoes.
Yeah. Now, the other thing that could happen, too, is Kushner could be indicted for just financial stuff.
You know, honestly, that's probably what's going to be. I'm going to steal that as my guess because I could see a way that Kushner could get indicted and it wouldn't require the whole domino thing to happen.
Yeah, he's one of the last people that could be indicted outside of collusion.
Yeah, and honestly, I'm not sure that Trump would be that upset.
But the Trump org could also be indicted, and Eric or Don Jr. could be indicted just for this stuff, this Southern District Stormy payment.
What if Eric is really actually okay, though? Like, what if he actually didn't do anything? It's possible.
He probably isn't allowed to do much.
It's possible he actually is going to be fine because he actually didn't do anything. I have not seen anything credible. It shows he's actually been sketchy.
No, I feel like he's kind of just an extra.
Yeah, you know? He may be okay. It's going to be him and Tiffany at the end, and hopefully Barry.
Tiffany. Oh, poor Tiffany.
Yeah. You know who also has, like, apparently, it seems like they're going to escape everything?
Hmm.
Steve Bannon.
Right? Isn't that weird? That's but I think so he's weird. Cooperating. I think he's fully cooperating. I think
really?
him and Priebus and Hicks, actually not Hicks, just Bannon, McGann, and Priebus. They all have the same lawyer, and so they all have to be doing the same thing, because if they weren't doing the same thing, if they weren't singing off the same sheet of music, he would not ethically be able to represent all of them. His name's Burke.
Yeah, so, but what if Bannon's not even like actually guilty of anything? I haven't seen anything that really makes me think that Bannon really is liable here.
Unless he helped, he could be considered a conspirator, but yeah. But if he's cooperating along with Priebus and McGann, and we know McGann is, so we know the other two are.
I'm just saying there's a non-zero chance here that Bannon was the good guy in the bunch.
Isn't that messed up?
This is definitely the worst timeline.
I'm still not going to send him a thank you card.
No. He's definitely not going to. Yeah. Off the list, but you know what? I guess. But then again, so here's my new theory. Surprise twist. Next indictment coming down has to do with Steve Bannon's bathtub.
Bathtub?
The bathtub. You've not heard of Steve Bannon's bathtub?
I have not heard of Steve Bannon's bathtub. What are you talking about?
Immediately go Google it right now when we're done with this, because Steve Bannon had a bathtub. I can't even tell the story. It's a favorite part of everything that's happened. Steve Bannon had a bathtub at a house he was renting. And one day, the landlord goes check on the house and then writes to Steve Bannon and is like, why was all this acid in the bathtub?
Oh, acid?
Yeah. He wrote, like, it looks like the bathtub has been, like, filled with acid.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Yeah.
Dude, so, that's, like, Breaking Bad level.
It is. But, well, just so surprise indictment, it's not Kushner, it's not financial crimes, it's not some of this like little side run-of-the-mill tax evasion stuff. It is Steve Bannon's bathtub.
Bannon's bathtub.
And whatever happened there, which maybe we don't want to know.
But they're not even on our fantasy draft. That Bannon's bathtub's not even in our fantasy draft. We're going to have to add him.
It's a dark horse. Like, it's a, you know, high risk, but high return.
We can make it worth 100 points. That's
it's
a good
worth
one.
1,000. I feel like if you call that, if that's your one call and you get it right, you win whatever game we're playing.
You win the whole thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Million points.
But also, I kind of just want to know what it was. Like, there aren't that many good reasons to have a bathtub that's been like acid washed. So.
No, there aren't. There's one reason. There's literally one reason.
No, there's two. Like, drugs and bodies. I could see either.
Exactly. Holy shit, I had no idea about that. I'm totally Googling it. Thank you.
Yes. So tell our listeners where they can find your podcast.
Anywhere you get your podcasts, actually. I listen on Apple Podcasts because I have an iPhone, but you can get it anywhere. Stitcher, Podbean, whatever you like. We're also on Spotify. So.
Do you have a website?
Yep, MuellerSheWrote.com.
I will admit I am super jealous of the name still.
It's really good. I wouldn't brag about it so much if I thought of it myself. I would be more humble about it, but it's an amazing. Kenai Williams came up with that. I can't take credit for it, but it's my favorite as well.
Well, it's great having you on, and I'm going to officially enter the draft for Kushner being the next on the list, and we'll see what happens.
Great. And if you do want to play Fantasy Indictment League, if you become a patron of Mueller, She Wrote, which you can do at the website, MuellerSheWrote.com, you can come onto our closed Facebook group and play the Fantasy Indictment League, where you get 5 picks and there's points levels for everybody. Everybody who picked Cohen this week got 5 points. Referred count, superseding indictments count, state crimes count, as long as it's got to do with this administration, pretty much.
I'm going to do that. I'm going to do Bannon's bathtub, Roger Stone again for like state crimes and federal crimes, Kushner, and I got one more to round it out. Well, let's see. God, there are so many options.
I know. I've got the Trump org. I added the Trump org this week. I took Stone off because I know that Credico's not.
Oh, this is like the soonest one. Long term, though, it's going to happen. It's going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah. You pick every week. You pick for the week.
You know what? I'm going to go for the long shot. Waleed Faris.
Ooh.
He's been under the radar. Nothing yet suggests he's involved. But that list that Trump read out of foreign policy advisors, you know, it's a pretty fertile ground there for possible indictments. So
there are. Yeah. You got Gordon and Clovis and.
Ooh, yeah. Clovis. Is that a popular pick right now?
No.
I'm totally joining because I need to see what everyone else is thinking, who's getting next.
Everybody's doing the same. Like Stone, Kushner, Jr. is pretty much what everybody is thinking right now. And somebody tweeted, it might have been Dworkin from the Dworkin Report, that guy, he tweeted out that there's rumors that DT Jr. is going to be indicted this week. But so who knows?
I am not going to sleep tonight because I'm going to Moneyball with shit right here.
Do it.
The long and good odds.
So. Indictment metrics. I love it.
Well, thank you so much, AG. It was great having you on. And to all listeners, go to MuellerSheWrote.com or find it on iTunes. And we'll catch you next week when DJT Jr. may or may not be indicted.
A big thanks to all our listeners for tuning in to the 45th podcast week after week. And if you'd like to give us further support, you can do that by becoming a patron at patreon.com/45thpod. By doing so, you can become a supporter and patron for as little as $5 a month. And to do so, again, go to patreon.com/45thpod. A shout out and thank you to our sponsors. They make this program possible. And I urge our listeners to please check out our sponsors and use their products. And thank you to them for helping us produce week after week. Thank you to our audio producer, Hannah McCarthy, our executive producer, Meethal Thelhan, and you can find us on social media. We are on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Our handle is at 45th Pod. Our website is www.45thpod.com. Thanks again for tuning in. See you next week.